If you're passionate about Ivy League basketball and feeling a little chilly, we'll stoke your fire to keep you warm. This is Inside Ivy Hoops, the Ivy Hoops online podcast about, well, I think you know, not into mislabeling here at IHO. And joining me now is IHO writer extraordinaire, Rob Brown. How are you, Rob?
Doing all right. Trying to stay warm. How about you, Mike?
Not too bad. Not too bad. We got a lot going on here. This is the first back-to-back we've got coming up. Of course, it always has to be a polar vortex when that happens, huh? But you actually got to take in the good weekend for Columbia this past weekend, and in presumably more sanguine weather in Manhattan, sweeping on the men and women's side. So let's start there. Let's start with the women's side. We'll go in chronological order. Columbia, the 65-57 win, and what was ultimately kind of a seesaw affair, with Columbia jumping out early, Cornell clawing back with a 21-point third quarter. Columbia ultimately hangs on to split the season series. What were your takeaways from what was a bit of a back and forth contest at Levian?
I think the biggest overview of both games really is just that the quality of the two games was much better than the two games last year. Last year, at least for the women's game, it was four people stand around for Columbia and watch Camille Zimmerman, and for Cornell, it would be four people stand around and watch Sam Whitman. And this year, it was really two teams going at it. What I was impressed with, I guess I wasn't as big a believer in Columbia as some of the other pundits around, and especially Megan Perry over at the Road to Ivy Madness podcast has really been talking up Columbia. And I know the offense and Madison Hardy and Riley Casey, but, you know, the defense was really, really strong the other day, which was really, really impressive. They did a nice job on the boards. Cornell was a very strong defensive team, and Columbia really held their own. And in fact, they did a better job than Cornell. And I think the biggest difference was Lillian Kennedy. She's a first year, and she grabbed 15 rebounds. And in the fourth quarter, she made two important buckets. She had, I think, three rebounds, and she drew an important charge call. So her effort all game long and in the fourth quarter was really impressive. And junior guard Janiyah Clemens had a pretty rough day on the offensive side heading into the fourth quarter, but she scored 10 points in the last 10 minutes to really take charge. And I was really taken aback with how determined they were and how skilled they were.
Yeah, it was, and jumping the gun a little bit, I suppose, but it was a really big bounce back weekend offensively anyway for Sienna Durr and Roxy Berriman for Yale, after being in single digits in the first half of the weekend, travel partner split. They turned it around from single digits to more solid shooting campaigns, much more extreme with Berriman, and we can get to that, but it was definitely the performance that Columbia needed to stay in the hunt for an Ivy tourney berth. On the men's side, obviously another tighter game for Columbia, but Columbia again pulling it off, getting another split. It seems to be tough sledding on the road in this series. recent past, getting the 73-70 victory. A pretty good effort, I would say, from Gabe Stefanini, sort of avenging himself after his late free throw would-be tying, game-tying miss at the foul line in the previous matchup. 24 points, 5 assists in 37 minutes, 8 boards too, and Patrick Toppe with 8 offensive boards in this game. But take us beyond the box score. What were your takeaways from another close Empire State win at Levian for Columbia?
It was a sloppy first half from both teams, but the quality of play in the second half was much better. Columbia shot 71%. They weren't really necessary. I think both teams had 4 three-pointers in the second half, but what impressed me was Columbia's movement. You know, they really looked for good shots, and you know, Stefanini had 18 in the second half, Adlish, when Adlish had 14. They really seemed to, you know, really take some high percentage shots, and they really, really took, again, it's an idea of who's taking charge. Cornell, you know, Morgan got his points, of course. He had, I think, 15 in the second half, 21 on the evening. Jimmy Boeheim, tremendous job, 18 in the second half, 22 on the night. The bigger difference, I really thought, was that, again, Columbia played more like a team at the end, and Cornell kind of gave up on their traditional ball movement and just realized, like, the three-pointers weren't happening, and so it was really left to Morgan and Boeheim to play a bit of hero ball and just drive the lane. Amazingly, Cornell had a bigger front court and kind of let them get back in that way. But, you know, as Quentin Adler said, guarding that,
it's not often the Cornell has a bigger front court. that's an interesting observation there.
I meant Columbia. You know, I was surprised that Tappe and Brumont, you know, were able to, like, they you know, I thought they were the bigger front court, and I was surprised that Cornell was getting away with what they did.
Yeah. No, I was just perhaps I took you too literally, but. Yeah, it's an undersized, and that's kind of an issue ongoing with I guess with both squads, but Cornell in particular being undersized in the front court. It certainly always helps to have a rim protector, and we've seen what Chris Knight can do up at Dartmouth, and maybe we can get into that a little bit as well, but yeah.
And it's with Cornell, because they really need, you know, Morgan needs to get his points, and you know, we're talking about 20 plus, and they really need Boeheim and Josh Warren to score, because McBride and Whiteside and Julian really aren't doing that, and so you know, Warren, I think, has 9 in the end, and it just wasn't enough. That it's really tough goings for them. You know, you really see a Saturday night that they really miss Stone Gettings. That's a completely different game if Gettings is playing for Cornell.
Indeed. And I should mention, I'm Mike Tony, editor of Ivy Hoops Online. I don't think I introduced myself. I'll blame it on the cold, but that's a bit of a no-no, but nobody ever accused us at IHO of being professional, so I'll take that loss and move on. Elsewhere on the women's side, Yale with an 84-72 win over Brown, flipping the script with a dynamic offensive performance. As mentioned before, Roxy Behrman played like the driving scoring leader that she's been this year. 31 points in all 40 minutes of play. 6 assists. What's your take, Rob, on how is this? Does this seem to be the two vying for the number four seed? I mean, where, how do you assess, you know, where Yell and Brown fall and what we might have learned about them from their matchup at Payne Whitney Gym Saturday?
Yeah, you know, I agree. I think you know, you and Richard mentioned it, and I think Megan mentioned it on the other on the Ivy Road to Ivy Madness podcast as well. I think that seems to be the consensus that these are the people, these are the two teams vying for four and five. I think the two weekends really, it's kind of how you expected it to play out. Both teams showed their strength on their home court. Brown dictated the tempo 2 weeks ago. Shayna Mehta had, 37 points, high efficiency. However, you know, Saturday it was the opposite. The Yale defense kind of dictated where things went. They got a lot of strong two-point shooting, which is usually their forte. Their three-point is not so hot, but their 2 points, the shooting is very good. Their rebounding is very good. Camila Enzbo is good. Also, Alex Cade on the inside. So I think, you know, it's not a surprise that they split. For me, I still think Yale is the four seed. I think with Brown, the Brown women, it's not unlike the Cornell men. They don't have much room. There's not a lot of margin for error. Ankle or her knee. I talked to someone at Brown today, and they said it's just, you know, they're still evaluating. So if she can't go, that's a big problem. Not that she's their biggest point producer, but she provides a lot of stability. She eats up a lot of minutes. She rebounds well, and on occasions can put up a good number of points. And for a team, like I said before, that doesn't have a lot of room for error, just like last year when Taylor Will went down, they went from 12-1 to 3-13 in the conference. So I think that's a tough slog, but they are, talent-wise, they're the number four and five teams in the league.
Yeah, it's a more fun league when Brown and that veteran exciting offense is firing on all cylinders. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect a similar slide from last season, and I hope we don't get it. And I'm confident that. And then the other game on the women's side, this time Dartmouth did score in the first quarter. They scored 24 points, in fact, and then it kind of went haywire from there. 73-57 victory for Harvard. Decisive fourth quarter for the Crimson. Katie Benson surpassing the 1,000-point plateau for her impressive career, 22 points, including 6 3-pointers in 37 minutes of play. What's your take from an interesting 16-point win for Harvard getting the sweep against the Big Green?
Yeah, you know, they came out really on fire. The was a fantastic first quarter, but it seemed like they kind of ran out of gas. And, you know, that's not hard to understand when you're playing against Harvard. They can push the tempo. They have three strong forwards, Jaden Bush, Rachel Levy, also in there, and Jenny Bame. I can't believe I forgot her. Sorry about that. But they really can wear you down, and you can just kind of see Dartmouth hit a wall very quickly. Um, they, they chipped away. They came back, and they, you know, to their credit, especially, you know, Sylla Paul, second year in a row, she's really, really done a great job, you know, in the backcourt. And she got them within about 6 points, I think. But then, again, you know, Harper just kind of turned on the Jets late and just wore them down. And, you know, the better team won both games. And I really think that this Harper team has a strong chance at moving beyond the third place spot that they seem to have occupied the last few years. I just think that with Harvard, with Penn and Princeton not being as elite as they were the last couple of years, and Harvard probably being a little deeper and a little stronger than they were the last few years, I think those three teams have kind of gotten a little bit closer, and the distance slightly moved away from the 4 through 8 teams.
Moving on to the men's side, I guess it was a bit of a holding serve weekend. We already covered Columbia. Back up to Friday, Yale with a 79-71 win over the Brown Bears, again holding Desmond Cambridge in check. How high is the ceiling for this Yale squad? I mean, they've got the sweep now over Brown, who Ken Palm is very high on, and we'll see if that bears out. But you know, Yale's got the sweep now. The defense is well established at this point. You know, you've got Mione's stat stuffing prowess is well known. Alex Copeland's a strong shooter with that rainbow jumper of his. And then you've got a pretty strong front court. What do you think the ceiling is for this Yale squad?
I think certainly with the Ivy tournament being held at Yale, that puts them in the front runner spot in terms of the postseason bid. But I do still think that they're the strongest team in the regular season. Obviously, they're the highest rated over at Ken Palm. I think they're 80 or 81 right now. They're 12-3. They certainly could have beaten Memphis so that they would have at least one more win. I think it's a big ceiling. I mean, they do what James Jones wants them to do. They share the ball well, they rebound well, and they defend well. They also take smart shots. They're 3-point, I think they're 2-point shooting. They're top 20 in the country. They're top 60 for 3-point shooting. I mean, they are just loaded. You know, they've got guys, I mean, you know, Bruner, their front court is exceptional. You got Bruner, you got Reynolds, you got Paul Atkinson, who probably start for most of the teams in the Ivy League, and he's coming off the bench for these guys. Reynolds can hit 3-pointers. He went 3 for 5 from outside against Brown. Bruner, you know, I think he can stand up to anybody. I don't think he's scared of any front court player, not only in the Ivy League, but in the non-conference schedules also. Oni's obviously, you know, the guy's rated, what, top 45 in the NBA draft over at ESPN. Trey Fields plays exceptional defense. Copeland can give you points. They can bring Swain off the bench for 3-point shooting. Eric Monroe is a very dependable reserve. I am very high on these guys. I think they're the class of the league right now. That doesn't mean things can't change because there's a lot of good teams in the Ivy League. But I think the ceiling is very high. I think Richard, maybe a week or two ago, was comparing them to the team from 2016. And I thought that was a phenomenal team. Sherrod, Victor, just from top to bottom, they were great. But I think this team's a little bit deeper. So yeah, in answer to your question, I think it's a pretty high ceiling.
Yeah, and yet I feel like because of Penn's kind of high wattage wins in the non-conference and Big Five success, and you know, the Princeton win over Arizona State and Harvard expectations, I feel like Yale hasn't gotten as much. Hasn't gotten as much attention as perhaps is merited, and I'm sure they're just as I've touched on with Richard in previous podcasts, I'm sure they're just fine with that. I'm sure they're okay with that. And I'm sure, and they've also, you know, maybe not had quite the hit from injuries that some of the other perceived upper tier had. Of course, Yale's had its own fair share of injuries in the past, recent past, with Jordan Bruner and Mekhi Mason. So it's not as if Yale has gotten off free, and I, you know, knock on wood all around. But, you know, let's hope. It's going to be a tough weekend, though, this weekend for Yale. Ken Palm, which you alluded to, really likes Yale, but it's basically a 50-50 proposition for Yale in its high rivalry game at Harvard Friday. Followed by tough second leg of a back-to-back in Dartmouth, which they've proven they can look like the Warriors at times with the three-point shooting. Not just Brendan Barry either, but again, the inside-outside working with Chris Knight interior. And Harvard hanging on over that Dartmouth squad at Leviades last Saturday with a 64-59 win over the Big Green. Could have been a bad turning point after Harvard trailed by one at halftime, but as was widely reported, Tommy Amaker kind of instilled the message of, well, this next 20 minutes could define our season. And for Harvard, it was a pretty crucial one. They avoided the travel partner sweep that Penn did not. And Christian Jezang, 19 points in 38 minutes. What was impressive to me was Harvard avoiding turnovers, which is something that has plagued them in the past, specifically against Dartmouth. And, you know, they were able to be more efficient, looked a bit crisper. Jezang with 5 assists. It's always nice to have Bryce Aiken back, I'm sure. He played 30 minutes, 14 points on 4-for-14 shooting. Justin Bassey with a strong game. Even if he didn't score, it doesn't matter. Box scores don't really do him justice, and I don't think Saturday was any exception. Your thoughts on Harvard hanging on at home?
They're learning to play again with Bryce Aiken. You know, Tommy Amaker kind of mixes and matches the lineups during the non-conference. I don't think he puts as much weight as other teams do. Kind of work in progress. And now you have a tremendous work in progress. Now you reintroduce Bryce Aiken into the mix. So I think they're learning. And, you know, I thought by the second half they really started to gel a little bit more. So Aiken obviously felt more comfortable. 0 points in the first half, 14 in the second. Juzang is just his steady, exceptional self. Chris Lewis the same way. Noah Kirkwood added some extra offense in there. I think even when Bryce Aiken is still trying to find his shot, his leadership really comes through, and you can see that on Saturday. He wanted the ball in his hands. He sank those free throws late when the game was close. So, you know, Harvard shoots well from the three. They shoot well from the two. The free throws have been a struggle in the early part of the season. It's all going to come together for them. It's just a question of what weekend does that happen? And is it this weekend against Yale, or is it another weekend when they face Princeton in 10? But you can see it coming together. And, you know, just from the free throw standpoint, with Aiken back, the team has improved greatly. I think they were shooting, they shoot 46% the first game against Dartmouth. They were 6-for-13, and then they were 14-for-16 on Saturday, and that obviously was the difference maker in that game. So that's Harvard side for me. I gotta say, I don't know if you agree with me, but I'm really impressed with the
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the non-conference was much better than everyone thought. You know, when they played Harvard the first time, that was about as good as it gets. They shot 80% from two, 50% from three. Everything was clicking, and they ran away with that game. Saturday was more of the typical Dartmouth. Not so great from the two, other than, you know, Chris Knight. Pretty good, pretty solid from three, 11 pointers, you know, maybe not so hot and from the free throw line, and they don't get there that much. So this was kind of like their typical offensive game, but they almost won it, and they played at Harvard, and a couple, you know, the first week of the season they went to Davidson and almost pulled that off as well. So this is a team that even, you know, when they're playing their game, they can obviously hang with anybody in the league, and when they're playing above their normal game, then they can definitely beat or run away from anybody in the league. So I think anyone underestimates them at their peril, whether they're at home or on the road.
Well, and what could ultimately push them over the top and very conceivably into a tournament berth is the continued development of rookie Taurus Samuels, who went 4-for-8 from three in just 19 minutes and got in double figures for only the fourth time this season. If he can keep that up, and his outside shooting was crucial for a team that otherwise, well, outside of Brendan Barry, which is kind of a given at this point, outside of him wasn't really getting too much in the way of consistent shooting on Saturday. You know, if Samuels can continue to come along, that would be huge. And we've seen that it can happen. And, you know, if you're Dartmouth, you know, you kind of take a look at this, at the schedule here, and you say, okay, we're 1-1. We got the split with Harvard. Now we've got two at home, Brown and Yale. Then we got two more at home after that. So, you know, you're home for the first half of February here, pretty much. Then you got Cornell and Columbia the following weekend. So if you're Dartmouth, it's time to bank some wins here. Time to bank some wins for the stretch run. You know, when you've only got six of your last eight away. So this is the time to pull some wins off. These are winnable games this weekend for the Big Green against Brown and Yale, the top two in the league, if we're going by NPOM. But of course, is that right? Top two? Yes, it is. Top two. Penn is just below Brown after the win over St. Joseph's, which we can segue into now. Why not? Penn with sealing a 4-0 finish in Big Five play. You know, 4-0 in Ivy play is not going to happen for Penn. That's already out this year. But 4-0 in Big Five play for only the second time, I think, in the past nearly four decades. Of course, that's a little misleading since there were a couple years in the 90s where they didn't play four Big Five games. But in any case, a nice win at home and on the road at the same time at the Palestra over the Hawks. Bryce Washington, 23 points in 35 minutes. He's shown what he can do, and that's why everybody in Philly is going crazy over Bryce right now. I think 6-for-12, not Bryce Washington, not Bryce Harper, not him at all, no. 6-for-12 from three alone. I don't know. Does this game help you make sense of Penn at all? But you know, 0-2 in Ivy play, 4-0 in Big Five play. I mean, is this what's the real Penn at this point?
I'm not sure. You know, I'd like to think. That was the lull in their schedule, and they're back to who they are. And I hope that's 5-3. Jake Silvey, 3-5. Really important. That was something that was lacking in those losses, and they really need that. Otherwise, you know, Devin Goodman can go down the lane, Antonio Woods can do that, but there's tends to be an over-reliance on A.J. Broder when they're not hitting their threes. And he's obviously up to the challenge, but he wears down as the game goes on. And that's when you saw those losses. He just couldn't get the free throws. He couldn't get those shots at the very end. So I think it's incredibly helpful. It seemed like Washington was taken out late in the games in some of those losses, but I'm hoping that with his performance the other night, he's there late. And it was also, you know, for me, I think Jake Silvey, his performance was great. I hope he can continue. I am worried the Kuba magic that we saw 2 weeks earlier against Temple, he was 1-5 from three. Goodman was 1-6. Woods was 0-2. I think at this point, you know, Kuba's some nights he's hot, some nights he's not. For Dev and for Antonio, I'm worried about their 3-point shooting, so I at least hope they limit it and give more to Silvey and Washington. Michael Wong, again, you know, back, I'm hoping his ankle is healed up and he's back to where he was. Big question mark still is Max Rothschild. He played 2 minutes the other night. He hasn't started in several weeks now. I'm not sure if that was just to give his back some more rest and then he'll be good to go this weekend, or he's going to be giving limited minutes for the next couple of games, maybe even longer. So that's a big mystery out there for Penn, and that's an important cog because I think we mentioned before, he really gets that team going, not only emotionally, but he really helps with the ball movement. I'm thinking it's more like the old Penn from this year, but I am not 100% certain. How about you?
Well, I think that I have a feeling that Penn is a little bit in between, but I think they're closer to the more favorable outlook rather than what we saw against Princeton. I mean, looking back at the Princeton back-to-back, I guess maybe it's a glass half full perspective, but I'm encouraged that the defense was as strong as it was, because there were signs in the non-conference to me that the defense wasn't quite what it was a season ago when it was really the prevailing force in sweeping Penn to the Ivy League championship and NCAA tournament appearance. I think that the cold outside shooting against Princeton is something that is going to come and go, but we ultimately saw the worst of it from Penn against Princeton. I realized that the Tigers can say the same, and they were able to ultimately ride Richmond and Ruragoso and in the second game, Devin Kennedy, to the win and some stronger defense, much, much stronger than Penn had to face in either matchup last year. But I'm not too down on them again, because I think defense is more of a constant rather than a variable. And I think that's kind of what we've seen. I mean, even if you look at the Big Five wins, it was strong defense that has helped propel them in these games. And, I think with Penn, it's going to be a matter of getting through this part of the schedule with four road games here now with Cornell and Columbia, which is always the dreaded back-to-back on the road, and then Brown and Yale, the best two statistically in the league. You know, can you weather that storm? I mean, we've seen Penn come back from 0-6, but you don't want to dig that hole. I don't know. I think Penn's one of the deepest teams in the league offensively. So my concerns with Penn are pretty limited at this point. They would have to go really, really cold or maybe have another devastating injury, or have the bottom fall out on defense for me to get really concerned with where Penn is at this point.
You think they need this weekend?
You think? I do think they sweep. Yes. Is that what you said? You broke up a little bit there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, but do you feel that they have to sweep this weekend?
Oh. No, I don't. I don't want to box them into a must win. I would say no. I mean, if they have a tough, you know, they have a tough game on the road back to back against Columbia. And I say this predicated on the fact that all they need to do is get into the tournament. We're no longer in, you know, every loss is devastating in the 14th. We're not there anymore. So all you've got to do is position yourself. And, you know, I think they're a veteran enough team and they've got enough home games on the back end of their Ivy slate that they don't need the sweep this weekend. But we'll see. The big concern as of ever with them is the free throw shooting. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a couple of games beyond the overtime loss of Jadwin that they already suffered that they're going to lose because of free throw shooting. It's going to happen. But I like Penn's defense enough. I like their shooting enough. I like their coaching enough. And I just like their intangibles as a team, a veteran team, that, you know, they're going to be there in the mix when it's all said and done. So on that in that vein, looking ahead to this weekend, Penn's going to try to win at Cornell for yet another time. I think what they haven't lost to Cornell in the Steve Donahue era, ironically, former Cornell, of course. Coach Steve Donahue knows how to beat his former team, and they're going to try to do that again 5 o'clock Friday. One of two games on the men's side on ESPNU, the other being Yale at Harvard, immediately following at 7 o'clock. All other games on the men's side on ESPN Plus. We got Brown at Dartmouth, Yale at Harvard, which is arguably the most intriguing matchup of the weekend, at least to me, current with Princeton and Columbia, then Yale, Dartmouth, Brown, Harvard, Princeton, Cornell, Columbia. Anything most intriguing to you in these matchups, or anything you're looking out for this weekend?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, you know, Yale, Harvard speaks for itself. The two of the strongest teams in the league, a marquee matchup on national TV. That's pretty obvious. You know, I think for Penn and Princeton, it's a good weekend to face Cornell and Columbia. They both have their issues to work out, but I think that they can go in with the idea that they're the favorite. Even with Princeton trying to figure out playing without Devin Kennedy, I think they're not given games, that's for sure, but I think better that than to do the other road trip. One thought I have. The game that really intrigues me is Dartmouth-Brown. I think, again, like you were talking about the women with Brown and Yale, right now Harvard, Brown and Dartmouth could be the teams kind of looking at like the 4, 5, and 6 areas, and this is a key Ivy tournament-type matchup. I really think Brown took a big hit the other night, not a you know, season ending by any means, but I thought it was a pretty tough game for them. You know, Yale came out really strong and really aggressive in that first half. Jordan Bruner went after Tamine Cho. They both got double technicals very early. I think Bruner hit a three-pointer, just like looked at the Brown bench, put his finger to his mouth and told them to be quiet. And I think other than Cho, the rest of that team really didn't stand up at that point. Cho had a tremendous game, but Cambridge really struggled. Hunziker had trouble. Josh Howard's dealing with a bunch of injuries. He's still recovering from an ankle injury a few weeks ago. And then he took an elbow to the face and was wearing a gigantic face mask the other night. So I think that's a team that's a little bit down. After the game, Mike Martin said, "We're still a work in progress offensively and need to find a way to get our offense going. We need to improve every day, work on our spacing and defensive rebounding." That's pretty tough after, you know, a great non-conference schedule. So I think they're in a pretty tough spot going against a Dartmouth team that's really angry that they lost. They, you know, the Coach McLaughlin's post-game conference was along the lines of, hey, Harvard made some great plays at the end, all credit to them, but this was our game to win. So I think Dartmouth's ready for this, and this is going to be a really telling game as the season goes forward.
Well, one of the thing that is one of the interesting stories with Brown and Dartmouth is one of the reasons why KenPom favors Brown so much is the defense, and the 3-point defense for Brown has statistically been great this year. They're top 10 in the country in defensive 3-point percentage, and Dartmouth is in the top 10 in offensive 3-point percentage. So I think some of that is a bit luck and variance from a defensive standpoint for Brown. So I think this is a real test. You know, this is a real team strength with Dartmouth and a clear emphasis. And, you know, defense is going to be tested. I think that's, you know, it's going to be with Dartmouth, it's going to be can you bottle up Desmond Cambridge the way Yale did? And not every team has a Trey Fills in the backcourt on defense or Mie Oni, helping out on that front. Dartmouth is among the worst in the country in turnovers. They don't play particularly aggressive. They do have rim protection, but you know you need more than that to go up against a Desmond Cambridge. So you know that's a matchup that I think is more favorable for him. But we'll see. I mean, that is one of the more intriguing matchups, and you know, I think it could go either way. I do think that it might tend to be a bit higher scoring than we've seen. Than Dartmouth's game at Leviades. Let's put it that way. Brown, I feel like the jury's still out on them a bit. The win at San Diego State was certainly very notable. And, I don't think it's a fluke that Brown is – certainly Brown is an Ivy Tournament caliber team. I feel like this is their year after some bottom-tier finishes. Cho is definitely, he was KenPom game MVP of both of those games at Yale, I recall, against Yale rather, I recall. And certainly he's been very strong the entire season for the most part. And I like these two teams, as you say, as you point out, in that they've got talent that I feel like doesn't get as much attention, whether it's Cho or Knight, or even, you know, I feel like Brendan Berry even doesn't get as much attention or credit as a ball distributor as he is. I think we've known for a while that he's a great 3-point shooter. Maybe folks can watch this game around the Ivy landscape and, appreciate two pretty potent teams and two teams that, quite frankly, I think are better than we expected them to be at the beginning of the season. On the women's side, Harvard at Yale on ESPN3 Friday at 6. All other games on ESPN+, although Harvard-Brown Saturday is on NESN. Any games stand out, or any storylines, or any anything else that you're looking out for on the women's side this weekend?
Yeah, so I think, you know, in terms of Princeton and Penn going to Columbia Cornell, I think those are incredibly favorable matchups. But I am curious to see how Columbia deals with Princeton. You know, they were very pleased and comfortable and very confident when they finished the Cornell game. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Lillian Kennedy battle with Bella Allery, you know, a savvy veteran against a rookie. You know, this is where Columbia would want Princeton, you know, at home. I think they've got to beat Dartmouth. And as I said earlier, if they don't have all the pieces of their starting lineup together, then that could be a challenge, but they have to win that, so it's very important. And Harvard-Yale is probably the best matchup of two matched teams, let's put it that way, the best game with two evenly matched teams this weekend. You know, since it's at
Yeah, that would seem to be the marquee matchup of the weekend for sure. Rob Brown, thank you so much for taking time out. Anything? Have we missed anything? Is there any ground we haven't covered? I know we've got. I don't know about you, but I'm already excited about flannel night coming up at Dartmouth, which you gave me the heads up on coming up next weekend.
Right, this week is alumni weekend up at Dartmouth. We're expecting a member, the last member of their last NCAA team, which is pretty cool up there. One thing I will just say, and you know, I know I alluded to it in the article about the women's game at Columbia, but I you know, talking to Coach Griffith afterwards, you know, asking her like what happened, what was going on in the team's mind when Cornell went on that big run. And she said, you know, her job is to teach them during the week and then to kind of keep them calm in those moments. And she looks for her team to kind of take charge. And so she knew that Janiyah Clemens was kind of like a leader on the floor and grabbed the players and kind of got everybody to focus. And at the end of the men's game, I asked Jim Engels what was their mindset when Cornell started to come back. And he just looked at me and said, you know, players listen to us, we tell them what to do, and they followed their game plan and things worked out well, obviously paraphrasing. Not saying one's better than the other, but it's very interesting to see the two different approaches, and, you know, it'll be interesting as the season plays out to see, you know, which style is more successful. I think that's something that I'm kind of keeping my eye out for.
That is a pretty cool juxtaposition on campus there between the two programs, isn't it? And yeah. that's why you're one of the best around. I would dare say I don't say it really with any hesitation, the go-to source for all things Ivy Hoops. Rob Brown, thank you so much for taking time out, sir.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. Stay warm.
All righty. You do the same.